We have been talking this month about the idea of having self-control. And the memory verse is Proverbs 25 and verse 28, that like a city that's broken into and without walls is a man who has no control over his spirit. That's our memory verse for this month. And I'd like to finish out this month talking about an article that actually came out almost 19 years ago. But Philip Dawdy, in August of 2002, wrote an article titled, What Little Boys Are Made Of. And the thrust of the article is that the school systems are biased against the ways boys generally behave. 85% of the students in the emotionally and behaviorally disturbed programs are boys. And it's not that boys are four times more disturbed than girls. Well, maybe girls think so, but rather there's a mismatch of expectations. Schools are more favorable to girls' behavior, which is not rowdy. And again, we're talking about generalities. According to Gene Edgar, a professor of special education in the University of Washington, boys may be prone to more overt acting out behaviors, says Ted Feinberg, assistant executive director of the National Association of School Psychologists. In other words, not paying attention in class, impulsiveness, shouting are a few of the typical boy behaviors, he cites. Girls are less so, and that's most troublesome for schools because schools work better when everybody is basically on a level playing field. And some scientists believe they found the key, because during adolescence, the brain goes through a massive stage of rewiring, preparing the person for adult life. When a small child goes through a similar phase to develop the five senses and gain muscle control, a teen is developing pathways for memory, decision-making, impulse control, and emotional control. And the peak changes basically coincide with growth, physical growth. So, in other words, basically on average, about 11 for girls and about 14 for boys. And the problem comes in that transitional stage, and it can last several years past the actual physical growth. Late teens for girls, mid-20s actually for boys. Have you ever wondered why car insurance is higher, well, it used to be higher for boys up through the 25. And it's because boys tend to be impulsive for a longer period of time and do things without control. It doesn't excuse bad behavior, but explains the common experience of being scatterbrained, emotional roller coasters, and the reckless behavior that's involved in by teens. And rather than allowing free rein, what teens need is practice bringing in those wild impulses under control. It's the practice done during the developmental years that will last throughout adulthood. What the Bible teaches us in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and in verse 9. And if you want to mark this section, we're going to come back to it in each point. We're going to draw several points from this passage. But Ecclesiastes 11 verse 9, it says, "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. Youth is intended to be a period of fun." But notice that warning. You're still responsible. God will bring you into judgment. And so he continues on and says, "So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting." We are still responsible. Yet we're told, when you're young, have fun. In fact, if we go back to verse 7, it says, the light is pleasant, and it's good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. And let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. It doesn't mean all of life is fun, but life is intended not to be miserable. Again, going back to Ecclesiastes chapter 8 this time. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 15. So I commend pleasure, for there's nothing good for a man under the sun except to eat and to drink and to be merry. This will stand by him in his toils throughout the days of his life which God has given him under the sun. What is it that allows us to get through all those hard days of work? And part of it he's saying is knowing that there are good days. There are days out there to go have fun. Memories of the days that you had fun. Those help us get through life. Because there are going to be a lot of difficult times. There are going to be a lot of sorrows. That's just the way life is. And the advantage youth have is that, not totally, but for the most part, youth can ignore a lot of the difficult times because their parents are shielding them from most of the difficulties. I'm positive I don't know half of what my parents went through, even if that much. I don't know the days when they were sitting there going, figuring out whether they could make the money stretch or not. They didn't share that with me, and it wasn't really anything I could have done well as a kid anyway. All I remember is having fun, and that's the way it should be. Now, there are going to be things that are going to be sad, even during your childhood. There are going to be times that you're going to face some hardships. Can't be shielded from everything, but parents shield a lot of the kids from a lot of the problems. And there's time for fun. But we also have to remember there's time for serious things. We go to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, there is an appointed time for everything, and there's a time for every event under heaven. And he goes down and lists a whole bunch of different things. But notice in verse 4, there's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. There's times to have fun, but we also have to remember there are times that we have to be serious. We have to control our impulses. And the problem comes up when fun is misused. For instance, in Proverbs or Ecclesiastes 2, it says in verse 1, I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself, and behold, it too was futility. And I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? What he's saying is, pure laughter and silliness is useless. Oh, there's times that you feel like giggling and cutting up and having fun, but it doesn't really accomplish anything. I don't know, have you ever met somebody who just makes a joke out of everything in life? At first it's a blast, they're fun to be around. But after a while it gets kind of annoying and tiring. And then it becomes an irritation. In fact, take a look at Ecclesiastes 7. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 6. For as the crackling of thorn bushes under a pot, so is laughter of a fool. This too is futility. For that imagery, if you ever built a fire, don't put thorns on the fire. Because then when you set the pot down on the thorns, and as the heat expands, it's just like, you know, fingernails rubbing down the chalkboard. It's that sound. Just goes up and down your spine. He said, that's what the laughter's like. It's just irritating. sends chills down your spine because it's just not always appropriate. In fact, that's a complaint God had against Israel. Take a look at Isaiah chapter 22. Isaiah 22, and in verse 12. Isaiah 22, starting at verse 12, it says, "Therefore, in the day that the Lord of hosts, Lord God of hosts, called you to weeping and to wailing, to shaving the head and to wearing sackcloth, instead there was gaiety and gladness, killing of cattle and slaughtering of sheep, eating of meal and drinking of wine. Let us eat, drink, and for tomorrow we may die." What's God's complaint? You're being punished. This is a time for you to be sorrowful. This is a time to be show regret. And what are you doing? You're throwing parties. They were trying to distract themselves with fun from realizing what God is trying to accomplish. They didn't want sadness. But you know what? Do you think all that partying stopped the evil times from happening? The answer is no. If they had just repented, if they had just changed, they wouldn't have gone through nearly as much severity. It was because they were trying to ignore what God was trying to accomplish. Things got worse. We have to remember that sorrow has a place in life. Take a look at Ecclesiastes again, this time chapter 7. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 2. "It is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man, and the living takes it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for when a face is sad, a heart may be made happy. The mind of the wise is in the house of mourning, while the mind of the fool is in the house of pleasure." We have to focus at times on sorrow. We have to realize all of life is not fun, and it has a place. Not only can fun be misused, but sometimes people have fun at the expense of other people. You ever done something that you thought would be funny, but the person on the receiving end didn't think the same thing? There's a problem there. In Proverbs chapter 14, Proverbs 14 and in verse 13, "Even in laughter, the heart may be in pain, and the end of joy may be grief." There are times when and the person might actually laugh along with you, but they're hurt. Having fun at the expense of somebody else is not fun. Some people grow up taking all their fun out on the expense of other people. In fact, James talks about that. James chapter 5. James chapter 5 and in verse 4. "Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the Lord of Sabaoth. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You condemned, you have condemned and put to death the righteous man, and he does not resist you." Some people just take advantage of other people. They have all their fun. They have all their pleasures. They make their money off of other people's sorrows. That's not the way to have fun in life. A big problem, especially for teens, though, is focusing on the fun and not seeing the dangers. Have you ever, for those who have been kids, have you ever been playing a video game and suddenly mom is between you and a screen saying, I do believe the house could burn down around you and you wouldn't notice. Seen that happen several times. And though she probably is exaggerating, still has a point. We can get so wrapped up in our fun that we ignore any potential dangers around us. Take a look at what Amos said in Amos chapter 6. Amos chapter 6 and in verse 3. Do you put off the day of calamity, and would you bring near the seat of violence? Those who recline on beds of ivory and sprawl on their couches and eat lamb from the flocks and calves from the midst of the stalls, who improvise the sound of the harp and like David have composed songs for themselves, who drink wine from sacrificial bowls while they anoint themselves with the finest oils, yet they have not grieved over the ruin of Joseph. God's punishing Israel. Things are falling apart. How are these people behaving? As if there's not a care in the world. They're just having fun. Sitting back, eating, picking out some new tunes on the lyre. They're just as if nothing bad is ever happening. Whilst bad things were happening. In fact, some people try using pleasures to put off problems and dangers. That's probably the most common reason I hear for people who get involved in drugs and alcohol. Because it disconnects them from reality. And they don't have to deal with it right then. Take a look at Proverbs 23. Proverbs 23 and in verse 29. Who has woe and who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complainings? Who has wounds without cause? Those who has redness of eyes, those who linger long over wine, those who go to taste mixed wine. Who has all these problems? It's the people who are lingering over alcohol. Mixed wine is, that's one of the ways they did drugs back then. You mix different psychotic herbs in with the alcohol and dissolved it. So those who get involved in drinking and those who get involved in drugs, they have all sorts of problems in their lives. Goes down in verse 33, he says, your eyes will see strange things, your mind will utter perverse things. You'll be like one who lies down in the middle of the sea or one who lies on the top of a mast. They struck me, but I did not become ill. They beat me, but I did not know it. When shall I wake? I will seek another drink. It disconnects them so they don't have to deal with reality. And when reality comes flooding back in because they're down off their high, all they can think about is, I want to get high again. It doesn't solve any problems. It makes things worse. In fact, he says in verse 32, at last it stings or bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. It's poisonous. It's destructive. It harms the person. It's not just drugs and alcohol, though. People will search out any type of pleasure to distract them from the cares of life. Can it even lead to sexual experimentation? Because the focus is then on the fun with no thoughts to the dangers. Take a look at Proverbs 7. Proverbs 7 and verse 21. With her many persuasions, she entices him, and with her flattering lips, she seduces him. Suddenly he follows her, and as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as one in fetters to the discipline of a fool, until an arrow pierces through his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare, so he does not know that it will cost him his life. Now therefore, my sons, listen to me and pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for many are the victims she has cast down, and numerous are her slain. And her house is the way of Sheol, descending into the chambers of death. Those last points is directed to us. I don't know how many young people think it's not going to happen to them. Oh, yeah, all those other people, yeah, they had problems, but I'm different. Most guys think that I'm stronger. That's why he said, well, many are the strong men that went into her house. It will destroy you. He talks about it as a trap. It holds you. It's an arrow piercing your liver. I don't know if you realize this, but in a battle, if you take a wound to your liver, you can keep going for quite a while. It won't kill you right away. And you might fool yourself into thinking, hey, I can get, it wasn't that bad of a wound. But it will kill you. It just takes a little longer. That's the way it is with these types of sexual pleasures. It will harm you. But you end up fooling yourself thinking it won't because it didn't happen right now. Then there are those who use sin as fun. Not that the things that we were talking about weren't also sins, but there are some people who just purposely go out and sin because they think the sin itself is fun. In Proverbs chapter 1, take a look at verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like shield, even whole, as those who go down in the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our house with spoil. Throw in your lot with us, and we all shall have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. For their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. And down in verse 19 it says, and so is the way of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessor. It might sound like fun to have power over other people, make money, gain wealth all of a sudden, have other people that are buddies with you, but it's going to kill you. Now, I've known people that think that the way to have a blast is to go out party and get stoned out of your gourd. Can't even remember what happened. And I keep wondering, how's that fun? When you don't even remember what the fun was. In Mark chapter 5, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead. 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, and starting at verse 3. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and then malign you. Partying is the way the world runs. But the world is running off the edge of the cliff. Not the direction we need to go. I even know people who think it's fun just to tell dirty jokes. Use bad language. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 3. But immorality or impurity or greed must not be even named among you as is proper among the saints. There must be no filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting which are not fitting, but rather the giving of thanks. For you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. You know that you can't sin and get to heaven. It's just that simple. And so Titus, if you want to move your marker, we're going to Titus next. Titus is told by Paul to teach young men. And that's our scripture reading that we had today. In verses 6 through 8, he says, likewise urge young men to be sensible, to in all things show yourself to be an example of good deeds, with purity in doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, so that the opponent may be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. Titus is told to teach the young men to be sober-minded. The word means to be sober, of sound mind, or of a healthy mind, being moderate, having self-control. In Mark is an example of someone who's exactly the opposite. Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5 and in verse 2. It said, when he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And he had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain. Because he had often bound him with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, night and day, he screamed among the tombs and in the mountains, and gashing himself with stones. This was a man who's out of control. Now, he had a reason. There was a demon in him. But he was not sober-minded. He didn't have a healthy mind. And notice what happened when Jesus healed him. Down in verse 15. They came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed, sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind, and the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. Here was a man who's now sober-minded. He has control over himself. Now, youth is a time of where you struggle with impulse control. It's far too easy to give in and do the first thing that comes to mind. And this is the time when young men have to train themselves. Hard as it may be for a while, to think ahead and avoid the extremes. Because dangers lurk everywhere. Take a look at 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5 and in verse 8. It says, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Satan's on the prowl. How do you deal with it? You've got to be sober-minded. You can't deal with Satan while you're chasing after fun. And so Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 1, And in verse 13, therefore prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope on completely on the grace that is brought to you at the, or to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Keep your mind focused on what you got to accomplish. Don't let the world distract you. This is a time for young men to train themselves. This is a time to be prepared and to watch. But Paul told Titus also to tell young men to show themselves to be examples of good works. Going back to Titus again. You know, temptations are everywhere. And as a young person, you don't have a lot of experience dealing with them. In fact, in Titus chapter 2, take a look at verses 11 and 12. For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation to all men, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires, and to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in this present age. Now, some people will say, well, boys will be boys. Let them sow their wild oats. But by this, they're saying that people are going to sin, so why resist? But if you remember Solomon's warning in Ecclesiastes 11, we're going to be judged. Why should we, a young person resist temptation? Because we are going to be judged by God. Rather than giving into impulses to sin, now's the time to establish good habits. Take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12. Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself as an example of those who believe. And in Ecclesiastes again, chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, look at verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you say, I have no delight in them. When do you need to start following God? When you're young. Looks like I ran ahead of myself. But we also need to, Paul told Timothy, to show integrity. Integrity in our teachings. It literally means incorruptible doctrine or teaching. You know, youth is a time of ideals. But it's so easy to get sidetracked into false ideas. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 14. As a result, we no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, but by the trickery of men, by the craftiness and deceitful scheming. There are people out there that are going to try to teach you false things. Have you ever thought about, we haven't had problems recently, but those Muslim suicide bombers. Have you ever thought about why are they always young men? You don't see old guys doing it. Very few ladies do it. It's always young men. It's because the reasoning and the restraint parts of the brain aren't developed yet. Young men are very easily persuaded in doing reckless things that older men say, would look at it and say, you got to be kidding. It's so easy as a young person to get pulled into ideas that are not true. Rather than thinking of ideas just because they're different from your parents or from other old fuddy-duddy people, use older people to make up for what you're still developing. Now Titus goes on and says, be reverent. And by this it means dignity, to be honorable or noble. It's a person who commands respect by the way they behave. And sometimes I hear that from young people. Well, why doesn't anybody give me respect? Probably because of the way you act. See, unfortunately, a lot of young people seem to go out of their way to get the opposite from people. And once again, instead of taking the easy way of following impulses and demanding everyone accept you the way you are, God is telling young men to train themselves to act in such a way as to cause other people to sit up and take notice and say, ooh, I'm impressed. Be the knight in shining armor. Be the hero, not the hoodlum. And if you can develop that ability now, think about the doors of opportunity that are going to open up to you when you're an adult. Paul also says that we need to teach young people to be incorruptible. And that word means something that cannot be destroyed. Take a look at Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2 and verse 7. To those who by perseverance in doing good seek for glory and honor and immortality, eternal life. That's the type of person we're talking about. Don't let Satan taint your soul with the corruption of sin. Because all of life is ahead of you. Aim for something great, something of lasting value. Look at 1 Corinthians 9. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 24. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave so that after I preach to others, I myself will not be disqualified. Take a look at also at 2 Corinthians chapter 5. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 9. Here Paul just simply says, therefore we have as our ambition, whether at home or absent, to be pleasing to him. What is your goal in life? What do you want to get out of life? Because we're only going here for a little while. Life is short. Are you aiming to please God? Or are you using pleasures to keep you in sin? The consequences are eternal. And oh, it might seem like fun and games when you're young. But there's a serious aspect to life. If there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. For those of you who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brethren on your behalf. Why don't you come forward as we sing the song of Selected.